She's always been the type of person that just says things and she just speaks her mind. I guess that has a little bit to do with not having a formal education.
Hi everyone, welcome back to The Body Serve. I'm James.
And I'm Jonathan.
And this is our second episode of our second season, and we're here with a mid-Aussie Open report.
Which is something that we abstained from doing for the last three majors, mostly because our mid-Australian Open episode last year was easily our least listened to episode.
Yes.
Or maybe the second least listened episode. And so we kind of...
Well, we took it really personally, and we just stopped, you know?
We're also very green at the time, and not many people knew about us. So now that we're Twitter famous...
We're Twitter famous?
Well, I guess we haven't really had any serious trolls yet. So I guess that's...
I know,
that's,
like, give us your best.
And when people are really coming for us on Twitter, then we can say that we've really made it, right?
Yes.
But the tournament's been really eventful so far. We'll get into how soul-crushing Tuesday was, with Venus and Rafa losing a little bit later on. But the tournament started with the BBC and BuzzFeed releasing this article on match-fixing, deliberately released the day of the start of the tournament, right, for maximum effect. And it's been successful in that regard, because that's all people were talking about for the first few days.
And, you know, they dropped in the detail that, oh, there are some top 50 players.
There's a Grand Slam champion, but didn't really say if it was singles or doubles at first.
Right. And now they've said that we can confirm that it's singles and doubles, right? I just read that in the Tennis Racket.
Really? Last I heard it was just a doubles.
Yeah, that's also, I also heard that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what's right.
It's hard to keep a track of it. And honestly, I'm not sure I want to be keeping a track of it. Because part of my response to it, and a lot of people's response to it, was this isn't news. This isn't new.
Right.
People who don't follow tennis were like, oh my God, I saw a couple of headlines. Not tennis. Is nothing sacred anymore. You know, like, this has been going on for years. And then all these articles saying that, oh my God, Djokovic was approached to fix a match.
Right.
Well, this is something he's talked about proactively for years on multiple occasions. Like, this isn't new.
And, like, he said no.
Yeah. The issue at play here is that I don't trust that the ATP has done its best in handling this issue.
Okay. Well, they say, you know, they have the Tennis Integrity Unit.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they were presented with the evidence and they did with it what they could. And they can't prosecute people retroactively is one of the issues for them.
And they're saying, well, if you're thinking that we've dropped the ball and we haven't done what we should have, why haven't you also released the names? Because you yourself know you're opening yourself up to legal ramifications, which you don't want to, because you know your legal footing doesn't hold up. Chris Kermode or Kermode or... however it's pronounced. He came on ESPN's broadcast, which I wonder if that's written into the broadcasting contract, that if some fresh bullshit happens, the ATP head gets to have like 20 minutes of free airtime while live tennis is going on. And it amounted to just a PR segment saying that we take it seriously, we've done what we can, the TIU is set up for this purpose. And we assure you that nothing has been swept under the rug. We haven't actively tried to not address this issue.
Yeah, and it's not like the ESPN commentary team are like hard-hitting journalists.
No.
You know, they're not asking difficult questions.
No.
This was just his time to do his spin.
Yeah.
You know?
And in his defense, I can, like I said before, if the report isn't willing to name names, there must be a reason for that. And there is a bit of difficulty in pinpointing who exactly is at fault. But at the same time, I don't trust that the ATP has really done its due diligence and made its best effort to get to the bottom of this or been proactive 9 years after the fact since the Davydenko match. And we know this has probably gone on long before then.
Right. I mean, I think they have probably just been looking the other way for a long time and hoping the problem would go away. Because it's really bad PR.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear why tennis is a sport that is vulnerable to it and why players would be attracted to saying yes to these unscrupulous gambling folks, right?
Because it's difficult to prove.
It is. But also, let's say you're outside of the top 50, you're really struggling to pay your bills. You know, you're traveling the world, you're paying all your own airfare, lodgings, you're paying your coach. You might be paying for your clothes and your equipment if you don't have a sponsorship. You know, so let's say you make $50,000 by throwing the first set of your match. It's clear why some people would be attracted to it.
And some people might not think it's as big an issue or as egregious to throw a set when you're still intending to win the match.
Right. Where it doesn't affect the actual outcome of the match. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are situations where players will throw an entire match because the payout is probably bigger, right? I saw that blog released a list of, 15 names? And Leighton Hewitt's name was on it. And so, mm-hmm. of course, he was asked about it. But I just don't understand how they did their sort of own independent research and came up with a list of the most likely names that was mentioned in the
BuzzFeed. Well, it's about patterns, right? And monitoring patterns of betting throughout the course of a match, which I can see, which is where I think it's incumbent on the ATP to work with these betting sites to make use of their software to track where things may be a bit suspicious as to how they go about pinpointing people specifically without getting phone records and bank statements. I don't know how they do that. But I don't think, in my layperson's opinion, that they've really made a concerted effort to do it thus far.
Okay. Now, if I'm being totally honest, I'm really having a lot of trouble caring all that much.
Mm-hmm.
I just really want to get back to the tennis. Because until I see BuzzFeed and BBC come out with the actual names of the people they're accusing, I'm just not that interested.
Because it's a lot of whodunit without having... It's like throwing 50 darts on a dartboard
mm-hmm.
and hoping one sticks.
Right. And, I mean, Roger Federer wants to know who it is.
Throughout the first few days of the tournament, a lot of players were asked about the issue in press. Pretty much all the top players, especially the men, were asked about it. And at issue for some of them was the fact that the Australian Open, one of its big sponsors, is a betting website, right?
Right.
Andy Murray came out and said that he thought it's a bit hypocritical that the ATP would be so against, and rightly so, players being in bed with these betting companies and not being able to bet, but at the same time you're taking their money.
Right.
And my words here, it's a matter of horrific optics, right?
Yes. And because then, betting is not illegal.
No, it's not. And then Stan Wawrinka then said, well, there is something to be said about the relationship between the ATP and these betting companies that could be symbiotic and fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
And that if the ATP were to make use of these companies' software and analytics to be able to see where matches are, you know, unusual patterns are happening in the middle of matches, then they can maybe unearth more useful information that could help the TIU.
Right. Now, I think you're making the quotes sound a lot more interesting than they actually were, though.
Okay.
You're making some, extrapolations that make them sound smarter than they actually did.
Well, Stan's speaking in his fourth language.
Okay. I mean, I don't mean that in a demeaning way. And just, the questions were not very interesting. And to me, the responses were also equally uninteresting. And then you have Roger Federer being asked a question, if you found out about another player being approached, would you report them? What kind of question is that? Is he supposed to say no? Snitches get stitches. No. Of course he said yes. What is he supposed to say?
Also gave,
this is a stupid question.
He also gave a thoughtful response. He went on, I've been looking through a lot of the pressers for the week, for my weekly feature This Week in Tennis, because part of it, there's a press section where some of the more interesting quotes, I put them there. And when he was asked that question, he said, yes, I would. But he also pivoted and said, well, it's difficult for these players because if you're approached, you don't necessarily feel safe in reporting it because the spotlight is then turned on you in a negative way as somebody who should be monitored for doing corrupt activity, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so his opinion is that he would like to see a network set up where players can report these things and feel safe about doing it, which I think is very important because one of the other things that came out this week was that players on the lower end of the spectrum, they're being harassed and threatened for not engaging with these.
These like betting syndicates, basically.
And so what recourse do they have when they have literally nothing but the shirt off their back, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about something that I'm interested in. So the other day, I'm watching Serena's round two match on TSN, and we're getting Tennis Channel feed.
TSN is like the ESPN of Canada.
Right. At 9 p.m., it switches over to ESPN, and I didn't know this was happening. And guess what? They do 25 minutes in studio about match fixing while Serena is playing. So the first set's over. Then we get into the first game and the second set, and it's still not on. My head is about to explode. I wish you could have seen me. I was like in the house on the couch screaming.
Picture this.
Toronto, 2016.
Because yes, we could have gotten a stream fairly easily. But yes. That's not the point.
Well,
the
first
point
of all,
the point is
our Wi-Fi
you
sucks.
You know that Serena's going to be on. You've put little Susie to bed. You've fed her. You've walked the dog. It's a weekday.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work the next day. You're given Serena Williams in prime time. This is probably your one opportunity to sit down on the couch as somebody over 40 with a family to watch Serena for the whole 2 weeks. And there's this just fucking bullshit that ESPN is perpetrating against people. Like you're robbing people of their moment. So that you can parade this like treasure trove of dimwits to talk about match fixing.
Like I give a shit what Brad Gilbert and Patrick McEnroe think about like match fixing.
Chris McKendry's in, and then there's two people on set with her, and then they go cut to two more people, and then they and when they brought on Chris Evert and Pam Shriver,
oh my lord,
to then give their 2 cents after this has been going on for 20 minutes. We could have just thrown the remote at the TV. It was so ridiculous.
Well, because it's like, okay, now, you know, now it's 4-3 in the Serena match. Surely they have to go back to the match, right?
And I think I tweeted that, you know, watch, like, we're going to get see, like, 3 games of this match when the shit is done. And that's pretty much what happened. When I said that, I didn't think that was even remotely a possibility.
Yeah, because every time you thought they were going to go back to the match, they just, like, revealed behind the next curtain another like duo of bozos to talk about the same thing. Like I thought they were gonna bring out Dick Enberg back from the dead. I mean, he's not actually dead, but you know, he's retired.
Like,
where was Cliff Drysdale? I mean, Mary Carrillo has been blacklisted, so that explains her absence. I mean, and all of these people whose vested interests are very questionable, as we know, like, I just don't care. They're not experts on this particular issue.
They're barely experts on tennis. Like, you had a playing career. You know how to play tennis, okay, but that does not qualify you to be a commentator.
And you're preempting the 34-year-old number one player in the world who's American on American television. It's just fucking disrespectful. And I can't ever, ever see it being done with Roger Federer.
Like, how are we supposed to care about this match-fixing issue when you present it like that?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's in their right headspace to listen to you talk about it at that time. All they want is tennis. That's all they want.
And believe me, any casual fans who aren't necessarily tennis fans, they turned off the TV because they did not care.
I tweeted 2 questions asking folks, now that we have a Twitter poll function, asking them who their least favorite male and female tennis commentators were. And I've since come to realize that 4 for each category was not nearly enough. And that I was a little bit blind to the many feeds that people get. The British commentators, the Aussie commentators.
Well, this is, we were really looking at strictly American commentators. Yeah.
And not even necessarily Tennis Channel, but mostly ESPN, you know? And so we'll give you the results right now. For the men, there was Patrick McEnroe, John McEnroe, Brad Gilbert, and Justin Gimelstob. And in a pretty big landslide, with 107 votes total for the entire poll, Gimelstob took home 46%, followed by Patrick with 24%, Brad Gilbert 21%, and John McEnroe 9%. Which, if this were the US Open, I'm pretty sure John McEnroe would poll higher. Mm. But he's been a little bit out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah, I mean, Gimelstob, that's definitely affected by his sort of horrible personality and bad history.
And thankfully, it seems like lots of people have not forgotten about just how much of a piece of shit he is. Right.
Unfortunately, every single person in tennis leadership in the entire world has forgotten. Mm-hmm. But Twitter hasn't.
It's still shocking to me that somebody like Gimelstob, after all that he did with the Kournikova comments that he mm-hmm. made, that he's become so institutionalized in tennis.
Right.
So much so that a New York Times reporter...
Karen Kraus.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. That was a very strange puff piece. It was...
I tweeted about it really mad last night. And you kind of looked at me like, okay. I don't think he got where it came from. You hadn't read the piece or knew it existed.
No, I didn't know anything
exactly.
about it. Yeah.
So like today you're telling me, did you read this? I'm like, yes, that's why I was so mad last night.
Yeah, so I found it today and it was such a fawning profile. It was just so strange. It was one of those articles where you're like, why does this exist about anyone? You know, not that it was just him. It was hard for me to understand what the purpose of the story was. I mean, I guess, you know, a newspaper is trying to cover an event mm-hmm. from many angles, and some of them are going to be like personal interest features. And this is a profile of an American coach who's also a commentator, who's also a prick, you know.
But you see how this fuckery works? Like, do you know how many times we've talked about Serena Williams and how great she is and things that she's accomplished, especially in the last year? Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are coming out. Michael Lewis, you're one of them. You've done it before. To say, like, you know, like, those are all good things, but I don't see any mention about, you know, with the time when she tried to, like, bite the lines person's head off, mm-hmm. when she told this person she's going to go kill them, all this other stuff, like, essentially saying you can't tell the good without the bad. There was no bad in this piece.
Right. So I'm going to hold you to that.
Because Justin Gimelstob and his privilege doesn't get to have that story retold anymore.
No, I mean, how many stories about Serena's greatness have to cover the territory of her being deeply flawed, mm-hmm. right? That's her story.
And we're talking about somebody who is truly great. Justin mm-hmm. Gimelstob is great at one thing, being an asshole. That's it.
Well, apparently his partnership with John Isner is fairly successful.
Well, maybe he's going to be a great coach. Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
But like...
Because I don't know how you motivate John Isner, because he just said in an interview that... he's pretty happy. If he retired today, he's happy with his career.
Yeah.
And like, what?
I mean, that
but
makes sense.
But you have one of the best serves there is in tennis.
No, but I got his I got his statement. He said he'd been in the top 20 for like 6 years in a row. Maybe that exceeded his expectations for his career. He said that, you know, if I were to retire today, I would have had a good career. Like, that's fine. Like, he's not going to be a Grand Slam winner. It's just not happening.
No. Anyway, it was just a very strange article. And, you know, it talked about, oh, he has two phones, he has kids, he eats yogurt for breakfast. Like, who cares?
Because he's the busiest man in tennis.
The main idea of the article was Justin Gimelstob is busy. And that was really all there was.
So much so that he's too busy to wear a shirt while he's coaching John Isner. He just shows up to the practice court wearing his dress pants with a belt. And no shirt.
I mean, he's so busy. He was probably in the booth. He needs to wear business casual. And then he had to rush over to the court because he's so busy. And I mean, because they needed proof, they got Marcel Grenoyers to contribute a two-word quotation. Literally, quote, he's busy, period. Said Marcel Grenoyers. That was it. I mean, it just felt so much like a lazy, lazy piece of journalism mm-hmm. to me.
I have not forgotten, and I implore all of you to not forget. And if you didn't know, just Google Justin Gimelstob and Anna Kournikova and be prepared mm-hmm. for what you will be reading.
And it's probably worse than you remember.
Uh-huh.
It certainly was for me.
Right? And think about the fact that this man is such a big part of tennis, integrated in so many different ways. And the recourse against what he did was virtually nil.
Right. Well, it was actually a promotion.
Yeah.
You know.
Because that's how it works for straight white men and their privilege. Mm-hmm. And so let's move on.
Yeah, let's get into the Australian Open now. So I guess we should start with the bad news. So day two was a mess for us.
And if you recall our preview episode, I told you that I sensed that there was some fresh bullshit that was going to happen in like some kind of proportion that I'm not used to dealing with. And lo and behold, Venus and Rafa go out back to back on the same court on the same day.
Right.
In the same session.
And Simona lost on the same day too.
Okay. Not even remotely on my radar of bitterness.
So, I mean, Venus had a historically bad match in Auckland. We know that.
Hit over 70 errors. And she played Johanna Konta in the first round here, who she had beaten in Wuhan last year.
Right.
And I thought it was going to be a tough match for her. I really did. And so I wasn't terribly surprised that she lost. Very disappointed. And part of it was like, okay, Venus lost. I can deal with this. Rafa's coming next. I think even tweeted, I'm ready for Rafa to cleanse my spirit of this negativity.
Right. And you know what? You shot yourself in the foot again.
You were the one who I think was talking about how this is going to be a tough match.
Well, yeah, tough. But like, Verdasco hasn't done anything recently. He's just in the gym, you know, turning into like Schwarzenegger.
It might have been me. I might have said it was going to be a little bit more difficult than you thought.
And I said, you know, Rafa has always had some trouble with certain lefties, you know, who don't really have a problem taking his forehand. And the forehand is not maybe what it was at this point, you know, so I thought maybe he would have a little trouble. It might be a little tricky, but I fully expected him to get out of this match in three or four sets.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, so
he was up a break. He was broken. He was up two sets to one, lost the first set, was up two sets to one, went down a break immediately in the fourth set, came back, drew even in the fourth, was 2 points away from winning the match at 5-4 in the fourth set, ended up in a tiebreaker, lost that, went up a break to love in the fifth set, and then lost six games in a row. Verdasco hurt his foot at the end of the fourth set. And then according to him, I just decided to close my eyes and swing.
Well, apparently it worked.
It did, because he played some power tennis like it was Fognini all over again.
Yeah, I mean, Rafa is so vulnerable to people hitting through him now.
Do you want to talk about a little bit more about Venus? So we know that in the French Open last year, Venus lost in the first round to Sloane. Or was it second round? One of the two. And then didn't show up for her presser, was fined $3,000. And so she loses this first round match. And shortly thereafter, you start seeing tweets from, you know, certain tennis journals saying, oh, no time yet announced for the Venus presser. You know, a couple little feeler tweets, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm seeing some people saying already that, you know, Venus has already left the building. So I don't know if, like, these people already knew and they were just waiting to be able to tweet officially that Venus wasn't showing up. Okay, the whole thing just felt very suspicious to me. Like, there was an intentional stirring of the pot.
Right.
With Venus. And then when it's officially announced that Venus isn't showing up to this press conference, then you have people tweeting about it and then other people quote tweeting it saying, oh, don't forget, this is not the first time it happened at the French Open last year. And then others saying, you know, this is becoming a routine, blah, blah, blah. It felt like such a concerted effort to shame Venus.
Right.
For not showing up. And that's their prerogative. I'm not into, like, getting into names right now. Like, if you're that interested, you can go and look for the receipts. They're there. But why? Why was this happening? And I've always felt that there's been a certain level of resentment toward the Williams sisters together as a duo for their general just contempt toward the tennis press.
Well, I would say distrust.
Distrust and contempt.
Sometimes contempt.
No, there's a lot of contempt.
Okay.
And I feel like Venus is an easy target right now. Like, I don't feel like this is a big deal to be making a big issue out of it. I really don't. I mean, I understand, I acknowledge my bias here. I'm a big Venus fan. But why? Why is this an issue? Like, the ITF clearly doesn't care. Like, they fined her $5,000. That's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If Venus don't feel like showing up to a press conference and that's all they're going to find, fine her like $50,000 if it's a really big issue.
Right.
So she really thinks about it. But like there, a lot of people were her, you know, saying, you know, all you're going to ask her is about retirement questions. And she's probably tired of that. I'm sure there's going to be other questions asked that are, could add to the tennis discourse in a meaningful way. As to whether they would have been asked, unclear. But I just felt like if looking at the timestamps of those tweets, like these are folks who are likely all in the same room or within a few feet of each other. And yet, like 5 minutes apart, there's this interaction between themselves on Twitter, retweeting, quote tweeting, interacting. Like you're making a point of this issue, right?
Yeah, I mean, so reporters are in a unique position to sort of make things that they care about public, right? So in general, when you offend a journalist, they're in a position to put you on blast, right? But I think a lot of the tennis fandom doesn't really care if a player skips press. But if it becomes like a story, enough reporters are kind of talking about it as if it's a big deal, people get stirred up a little bit, you know? So I think there has to be kind of a sense of responsibility among journalists who are operating on Twitter, which is a unique thing because they're journalists writing for real print publications, but you're also in a social media space that prizes, you know, opinions, basically. So on the one hand, you're writing for a major publication, you're supposed to be an objective reporter, but you also want to present kind of your personality on Twitter. You know, so it's a weird position to be in, I get that. But the whole kerfuffle around Venus skipping the press seemed so drummed up.
And also, we know that Venus faces repercussions if she misses the press conference. Did they feel like the fine wasn't going to be enough and so this had to be done as well?
Right.
And by the same token then, like, fine, Venus has accountability in some sense. You might not think it's enough. Where's your accountability?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's some truly atrocious questions asked in these pressers. I don't think that that's overstated. Which is not to say that I don't think it's a difficult job.
Right.
To be going to these press conferences week after week, year after year, seeing the same people, trying to keep these questions fresh and interesting for tennis listeners. But a lot of time, well, some of the time, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of thought that goes into some of these questions. And so, like, I take issue with this kind of grandstanding with Venus.
Right.
And
this sort of moralizing.
Yeah. Because people are flawed. Venus is flawed. You are flawed. And this just isn't that big of a deal.
She's 35. She's been out here doing this for over 20 years. Like, who cares?
Really?
What is she going to give you in press? And we know she's obstructionist in press. Y'all don't like the answer she gives you anyway.
Like, do you want her to show up as Richard Sherman? You know, like, what would be better?
Right. Or, you know, you could show up like Serena and just give quotes for days. But they're fairly hostile.
Yes.
Now, you were able to watch the pressers and screen cap a few things.
I will. One more thing about Venus. I will say that I would like to see her show up to these press conferences because I think that she has still a lot to offer in driving the way tennis is reported on. I complain about how tennis media drive the narratives about tennis a lot of times in not very good ways. And I feel like maybe Venus's distrust of the media has led her to pull back, but I would like to see her participate more and engage more because I feel like she has a lot to offer.
Okay, so there was a pretty interesting article by Carol Bouchard on Sports Illustrated this week in which she interviewed Patrick Mouratoglou. Well, it was actually about Rafa. It had nothing to do with Serena. So he was kind of offering his two cents about where Rafa's game is at and why he's having so much trouble winning matches these days.
His opinions are for hire all over the place, aren't they?
I mean, has he ever turned down an interview? Ever? You actually pointed it out to me. He is pretty insightful.
Yeah.
You know, he knows tennis.
Serena's not keeping him around for nothing. Do people think that he's just keeping her hostage and he only lets her out of the cage to go play matches, you know?
Right. And I mean, he does get a lot of credit for her resurgence. And in some cases, it might be undue credit. But he's no charlatan. I really think he knows what he's talking about. He's smart. So he was arguing that one of the reasons that Rafa's so vulnerable these days is that his footwork is just not where it should be.
And part of that is because he's noticeably slower.
Right. And so is that a function of his age and his body? I have no idea.
Function of his lack of confidence? Mm-hmm. What's the relationship between the two? Is it reversible?
Right. So it's frustrating because Rafa needs to build up confidence, but losing in the first round of the Australian Open is certainly not helping. I don't know if his footwork is tied to his confidence or his body is slowing down at age 29.
It was one of the few articles that I've read about Rafa and where he is and where he might be going in the near future that made total sense to me.
Mm.
It's like something clicked in a way it hasn't happened before. Because I have noticed Rafa's footwork and speed not being what it was before. Mm-hmm. But he managed to tie everything together in a way that made a whole lot of sense.
Right.
So if you haven't read that, don't be deterred by the fact that you may not like what it has to say.
Right.
Or you may be turned off by Patrick. But it's definitely worth a read.
Yeah. So, you know, the other big upsets, well, that actually happened today. Pliskova lost to Makarova, which, I mean, based on where Makarova was last year, it's not really an upset because she was a top 10 player. She plays well at majors.
But I had earmarked Pliskova as somebody to watch this year, so yeah. That was a bit surprising for me.
And she had been playing quite well. Given how
open that section of the draw was.
Mm-hmm. And Muguruza lost to Strizova. How do you say it?
Strizova? I think so.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That's it. That's what I was trying to get to.
Okay.
Now, that robbed us of a Muguruza Azarenka match, which kind of sucked. I was looking forward to that. Two players that, you know, I don't really like that much. But
it's clear that Muguruza just isn't fully right now. Even when she played well and passed the eye test in the first round, she didn't really seem to be, A, that happy on court, and B, moving as well as she probably should be. You know, okay. It didn't seem like she was fully recovered, so I wasn't as surprised by that result.
Okay. But, you know, despite having some really horrible, horrible results for us, I actually have had a lot of fun this week in the Australian Open.
You have?
Yeah.
Pray tell. Tell me which matches.
Well, the other night, I was able to stay up later because I can sleep in on Thursday or on Friday. And I was like, oh my God, this schedule. Lord, there's nothing going on. You know, but then I got to see Federer Dimitrov, which I actually enjoyed. I know a lot of people thought the match kind of sucked, but I liked seeing that matchup and seeing that kind of almost that mirror image, you know, because mm-hmm. their games really look very similar when placed on the same court.
Except for the split second difference in speed with which Dimitrov hits his shots.
Yes, thank you, ESPN. But Federer is in really good form, and watching him play Dimitrov puts in relief what Federer does well. Because although their games look similar, Federer is just such a superior player in basically every category.
Mm-hmm. And what surprises me most about Federer now at this advanced age is still how quick he is on court.
Mm-hmm.
Not with his shots or the speed of his racket, but with his footwork.
Right.
You know, he still gets himself into good positions, which he has to with a one-handed backhand.
Yeah. But, I mean, he really should be slowing down at this point.
Yeah, but there's really no discernible difference.
Yeah, but watching him, you know, there were a few times when you saw him, like, step forward through a backhand down the line, and you were like, oh my God.
Or you just know. Still make all the right decisions and coming into net at the right time to cut off a ball and hit just a knifing volley to end a point.
Yeah, and watching Osaka Svitolina was really fun. Osaka was really a revelation, because I've heard about this girl before, but I had never seen her play, and I think this was a lot of people's first time really watching mm-hmm. her, and she was exciting, really exciting.
She's gonna be rising up the rankings real quick.
I think so. You know, she's still very young, and it's gonna take her time, and we shouldn't rush her, right?
Yeah, we always caution that.
Of course, the commentary team was saying, oh, her game is so similar to Serena Williams, and I'm like, just shut up. Just shut up.
Also, isn't it more similar to Sloane at this point than to Serena?
Probably, yeah.
And isn't that a more apt comparison to make? She went out to Vika tonight.
Osaka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which then precipitated yet another dab session.
Oh my God.
From Igloo Azarenka. Folks seem to quite enjoy that from the last episode. And so if we've actually coined something, wonderful. But we also want to acknowledge that we know where that comes from.
Yeah, credit where it's due. Azalea Banks is the one who invented Igloo Australia to refer to Iggy Azalea.
But disclaimer, we in no way, shape, or form endorse Azalea Banks. Because while she does have some things to say on race that are really insightful, her Cosby politics and her homophobia are just shocking.
Messy.
That was a side note. Moving on.
Oh, we're still talking about Vika, right?
Briefly. Continue. Yeah. You know, wrap that up.
So, you know, she's... I keep seeing all these tweets from official sources saying, oh, yeah, so she's the favorite, right? She beat Osaka 6-1, 6-1. She's the favorite. And like, what? What are you talking... Just shut up. How are you going to call her the favorite? The only favorite?
When in fact...
Like, just stop.
The thing about it, though, is Vika is playing really well.
Yeah.
She won her opening tournament of the year. But there is somebody else in the field who is playing just as well, if not better. And the fact that that person is playing at the level that she is playing should cause great concern to the rest of the field.
Are you talking about Strizova?
I'm talking about SW21, as Brad Gilbert would call her. I mean, I watched her play Kazatkina last night, who, you know, took out Venus in the first round of Auckland this year. And I told you today, because you were sleeping, that at some point I looked up online what was the actual time of that famous Steffi Graf Zvereva match at the French Open in the final, because it was heading that way for a while. It ended up just being 45 minutes, 6-1, 6-1. But Serena... what we're seeing of Serena right now is not what we expected or were told to expect at the start of the tournament.
Right. I mean, she looks to have rounded herself into a Serena Williams form. And, I mean, you can rely on Serena to destroy a player who's beaten Venus recently. It seems like a hobby of hers, you know? But, I mean, okay, as far as Victoria goes, she's obviously in really good form, and she's probably back to contesting for majors. You know, and this is, you know, probably her favorite one. It's her most successful.
And that's good for women's tennis. That's what we expect.
Yes, but...
But let's not get into this great white hope territory yet again.
Right. And we've seen many players go through their first few matches against low-ranked opponents and just utterly destroy them.
That's true.
We see Maria do this a lot. That doesn't mean you're going to win the tournament. It doesn't. Because Victoria has a pretty stiff test coming up. If Kerber gets to the quarters, she'll meet Kerber. And, you know, that is probably her first real test of the season, right?
It is. It would be.
Yeah. And, you know, the other quarter in Vika's half is not as strong. So you have Makarova left, Madison Keys, and Ivanovic. And Keys and Ivanovic are going to play each other. So you have one of them. So, I mean, don't forget that Keys is a defending semifinalist. You know.
She could very well find her way in the final this year. Who knows?
I mean, we've seen Madison zone like nobody's business against Venus.
And nobody hits as hard as Madison Keys.
Right. It just has to go in, you know.
And if she can manage that, then watch out. Radvanska is the heavy favorite to reach the semifinal in Serena's half.
Yes.
And she is continuing her good play, stemming from the back end of last season. She's won four tournaments since the US Open. She won Shenzhen to start the year. She's playing well. I watch her. The thing about Radwanska is I watch her play and she could be playing somebody who's playing well, and then, but she's still up 5-4 and you're wondering, how is this happening? How is she winning 5-4 and serving for the set?
Like, she just hangs in there.
She finds a way. It's not the most glamorous tennis. When she's doing her wizardry, it's fun to watch, but her point to point ground strokes are pretty hideous.
Well, not hideous. But she really uses her opponent's power.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means it's just blocking it back.
She hits these crouching ground strokes.
Oh, I really like those, though. Her backhand when she's practically like sitting down on the court. Yeah.
That could be a stiff test for Serena if she's not fully on her game in the semifinals.
It could. I mean, Radwanska challenged her at Wimbledon in 2013. And now Serena, in her quarter, she's scheduled to face Sharapova in the quarters. But Sharapova will play Bencic in her next round. Serena's section is very extremely soft right now.
Bare.
It is. That part has opened up. But in the quarter, she could play Bencic or Sharapova.
I'm going to say this now. I'm going to load you up to all of our all of our listeners. Because from the start of this tournament, and this has been going on for years, you have never once been concerned about Serena playing Maria Sharapova. Mm-hmm. And you've taken the position that, well, it's been like 62 years since she's beaten her. Mm-hmm. She clearly can't beat her. What am I being worried about? Right?
Okay, yeah.
More or less, right? And I'm telling you that there will come a time, like it has to happen. The laws of life say there has to come a time. And I implore all of you to give it to him if this is the time. Because he's been so blasé and dismissive of Sharapova this entire time in ways that he'll never say on air.
These people, most of our listeners are Serena fans, so they're going to be mad too.
They're going to be mad, but I'm going to tell you that you are the cause. You are the reason. Like, your bad attitude and disdain for Sharapova's chances.
Mm-hmm. Just me. Little old me.
Just little old you could speak this into existence. So I'm going to leave that there.
Okay.
That said, the one thing I'm looking forward to for the rest of this tournament with Rafa and Venus gone is for Serena to just mop the floor.
Dab
the floor if she must.
Don't even.
With Sharapova and Vika. If those two things happen, I am happy. She didn't have to win the tournament. Just like, dust those two.
From your mouth to Beyonce's ears. Make it so. Oh, speaking of good things, one of my highlights of the first week of this tournament was that Irani was out super early.
Yes.
I was like, Stakovsky. Bye.
Irana.
Girl, bye.
Irana. Irani, Stakovsky, Fonini.
Yeah.
And then Miss Roberta Vinci got the boot.
Yes. Bye. See you never.
Enjoy your farewell tour, Miss Thang.
So as far as I wanted to see, have our feelings changed about the top players after this week has gone on. So the women we talked about, now the top men have been winning pretty routinely. There hasn't been that much of interest as far as the top four or five men. Except for Rafa, of course.
Nothing has changed. It's still Novak and Stan.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Stan's looking better than he normally does in the early rounds of Grand Slams.
Okay.
And Novak looks pretty unflappable except for a couple games here or there.
Mm-hmm.
He was tested a little bit by Seppi last night.
Yeah.
Save for something with Raonic.
Yeah, see.
Or Wawrinka.
See, Stan's fourth round is against Raonic, and Raonic is playing really well. Mm-hmm. He's in really good form right now. So I wonder about that match. Commentators are saying this, is a potential match of the tournament so far. And I don't really think any match with Sleeve could be the match of the tournament because he's so boring.
Yeah.
But I hear you. I see you. I hear you. But I don't agree.
I do think that somebody who could be a dark horse, I would like to wish it into existence that Berdych could somehow get his maiden slam.
Yeah.
I would like to see that.
See,
and he had an impressive win against Kyrgios last night.
It's just not going to happen because he has to get through Federer and Novak in that half.
Yeah. And
it's
just his record against the two of them combined is, I mean...
But Novak's little section of the draw is interesting because he plays Simon next, but Tsonga and Nishikori Tsonga and Nishikori are playing each other, and that's the 7 seed and the 9 seed.
Yeah, but we've seen this all before. Tsonga and Nishikori will play a 5-set match. One of them will come out broken, and then it will be a non-issue for Novak.
Okay, just saying.
No.
Nishikori beat Novak at the US Open, right?
He did.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to happen here, But I've also, we were talking about Sangha the other day, and I cannot believe that he's 30 already. You know, I have been a fan for a long time, and I just feel like there's so much more that he has to accomplish.
And I said to you that you could give him 2 more years and take him back to 28, he'll still find himself back at 30, and still, maybe he'll have one more Rogers Cup under his belt.
But he's shown that he is someone who can beat almost anyone on any given day.
Yeah.
You know, he is a supreme talent, and he's...
No, not a supreme talent.
You don't think so?
No. I think he's
I think he's also like a supreme head case.
Supreme talent, that's really loaded. I think he's a very good player.
Okay.
He's 30 now, like it's over.
That's not true.
I do think that it's true. Like, unless he becomes like a Panetta.
Or a Stan.
Okay. Fair enough. You know, point taken.
Right? Tsonga's backhand is really not very good. That's the big difference. You know, he does have glaring weaknesses in this game. But anyway,
you're still hopeful for him. I'm not.
I would love to see a Novak Tsonga, what is it, quarter. That would be great for me. I think Tsonga is still someone who could challenge him. I don't think that he would win, but I think it could be an exciting match.
Okay, we'll see. Maybe episode 3 will have something interesting to reveal. Your Australian Open champion, Joe Wilfried Tsonga.
You know, stranger things have happened.
The other thing that was impossible to ignore the first week was Leighton Hewitt's retirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, the weird thing about tennis retirements is you don't know when their last match will be. It depends how long they play in the tournament. So I guess you have to have the ceremony ready.
Yeah.
But he is he's become a much more revered figure as he's gotten older. And a lot of that has to do with, well, he's a family man now or whatever. But he's also stuck around for so many years.
Past his prime.
When he hasn't been contesting for majors. And so there's something to be said about that. That he enjoys the competition.
We're talking about a full decade.
Yeah. I mean, he was in the Australian Open final against Safin in 2005.
Yeah.
That was
his chance.
That was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. And he won his majors in 2001 and 2002. So that is a long time ago.
Yeah. He was 2021 at the time?
Yeah. He was really young.
That was his peak. That's pretty sad.
But interestingly, Darren Cahill, in that article you shared with me, gives Leighton credit for making Roger Federer Roger Federer. Which I feel like maybe is a little bit dramatic, caught up in the moment.
That's also something, I don't think it's necessarily an original thought from Darren, because it's something Fed has himself said.
Right.
In interviews.
Basically, Federer was chiefly a serve and volleyer at one point.
Yeah.
And he was losing to Leighton, 7 out of 9 times, the first times they played. Because who can pass better than Hewitt at that time, you know?
Agassi.
Okay. Fine. It was a hypothetical question. But losing to someone like Hewitt that many times forced Federer to sort of basically shore up all the many, many tools in his kit and decide how to use them better.
Or as we say back home, we'll come again, you know?
Right. And so Hewitt was sort of a precursor for the kind of defensive and offensive players that we have today, you know, because all of the top four are able to turn defense into offense.
Yeah. But the thing with the Hewitt that we see revered now wasn't always the Hewitt that was on display on tour. Hewitt had some really rough moments, some moments of bad optics, some potentially racist moments, some moments of being a big jerk. And is it that he's matured? He's no longer that person. Are we just willing to forget it as we canonize our greats as we're wont to do? I don't know. I'm just a bit mistrustful of the process. He was never one of my favorite players because he was some fresh bullshit for Agassi toward the end of his career. You know, I was never a huge fan. I came to appreciate his game over time, but watching his retirement ceremony was not the same as when Andre was tearing up in the final game of his career against Benjamin Becker before he was even done.
Oh, yeah.
And then that speech he gave at the end. I mean, come on. So I don't know. Like, what do you think of all that?
Well, one thing about Hewitt is that he popularized this thing that is very annoying, but universal in tennis at this point, which is basically yelling come on at the end of every point, regardless of how the point was won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like cheering your opponent's errors is a fairly new thing in the history of tennis. You know, it was considered uncouth for a long time.
And it's become kind of codified right now.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody has a problem with it
anymore. No one has a problem with it. But, you know, like the fist pump, the weird thing where he looks at his finger, you know, the commands are just too much. They're too much. And you can really blame Leighton Hewitt for that. You know, I'm not sure what to think. I always actually liked his game a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really like him that much. I don't know. I have some respect for the way that he finished his career. You know, he was willing to undergo all these surgeries and, you know, he obviously really loved to be out there competing.
But what about all the bad stuff?
Well,
like the James Blake stuff?
Yeah, that's stuff that I really can't forget.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay. Do you want me to explain what happened?
No, I'm trying to get you to reconcile.
Well, I don't know how, basically.
Okay.
I didn't stay up to watch the ceremony. I don't care that much.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, where are you in general with regards to Hewitt? Because, like, we know there's more to this story than just this revered elder statesman.
I mean, I don't know. It's typical of sports in general. You know, these things just sort of get forgotten. And we can complain about it, but, like, these are not the things that he's going to be remembered for in history of tennis, you know, which is sort of frustrating. I don't know. I'm not that moved either way about the retirement.
No, if only Kyrgios would retire.
Oh, Lord.
I think that brings us to the end of our episode.
Yes. So thanks for tuning in. If you did, in fact, tune in the middle of the Australian Open, I know there's so much tennis going on constantly. It's really just a tennis overload. Yeah.
By week two, there is fewer tennis matches going on. So maybe there's more time for you to listen. Though this disclaimer should have probably come at the start of the episode.
Right. You know, and if there's like a boring quarterfinal or something, you can skip it and listen.
Like, just don't watch John Isner's next match.
No. Oh,
he's in the fourth round. He just won his third round
match. Do yourself a favor.
Like, there's no need.
Because I just had to suffer the heartbreak of Feliciano going out to John Isner.
I don't know why you're surprised. I mean, Feli has a good record against him. I get that.
And he won the first set. Yeah. And he looked like he was going to win the second.
Uh-huh.
It was very disappointing. And to have to see Gimelstab in the stands, like screaming like a madman.
I will say, I do like Isner's nickname from Twitter people who don't like him.
Jisner.
I think it's pretty good. That one is A-okay.
I'm hoping my nickname of Bigfoot will take off. I don't know. I thought it was fitting.
Well, for now, let's just be happy with Iglu Azarenko.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of the tournament, and we will check in with you when it's all over.
Please give us a review on iTunes if you like what we do. We love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter, Jonathan at SportsScribeCA.
And I'm James, and I'm at ElliotJMR.
Two L's, two T's. And The Body Serve is also on Twitter, at The Body Serve. All these wonderful ways for you to get in touch with us. And so we look forward to hearing from you, including if we can find some, like, troll to harass us.
Well, we're not soliciting. So anyway, thanks for listening.
Till next time.